Hello and welcome to The Corridor here on CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston, Ontario, and podcasting on Spotify and Apple Music. I'm Dinah Jansen, and with me is CFRC Local Journalism Initiative news producer Jesse Bell. This regional news program features news from Kingston and area provided by local and regional journalists through the support of the Local Journalism Initiative and the Community Radio Fund of Canada. Welcome and enjoy. Hello and welcome to The Corridor. I'm Dinah Jansen, and today I'm joined by CFRC's Local Journalism Initiative producer Jesse Bell. Our first story is from CFRC's Local Journalism Initiative reporter Christina Laurie, covering the Southeast Health Unit's response to the measles outbreak in the province.
Hello, I'm Christina Laurie, Local Journalism Initiative reporter for CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston, Ontario. Coming up are some of the top news stories in Kingston and the Islands. You can listen to CFRC's news programs Today in YGK and Kingston Currents on Mondays, Tuesdays, and Wednesdays at 5 p.m. or subscribe to our podcasts on Spotify and Apple Music. If you have any Kingston news tips you'd like to share, you can reach me at news@cfrc.ca.
Public Health Ontario reported a surge of measles cases in Ontario last week, with an additional 120 cases added to the total count. This brings the total to 440 cases of measles across the province since the start of 2025. Prior to outbreaks beginning near the end of 2024, there were only 101 confirmed cases of measles reported in Ontario between 2013 to 2023. While no cases have been reported in Kingston, the Southeast Health Unit, which includes the region, has reported 32 cases in Hastings County. According to a release from the Southeast Health Unit, all 32 cases in Hastings County involve individuals who are not previously immunized against measles. The Southeast Health Unit and Ontario Health Authorities have been encouraging residents to check their immunization records and remain up to date on recommended vaccines to limit the spread of the highly contagious virus. Dr. Ethan Tumiche, Southeast Health Unit Deputy Medical Officer of Health, spoke with CFRC about the risk level in the Kingston region.
I think when you're looking broadly, there's another number of factors that be increasing the risk generally about measles. When you take a perspective of what's happening, certainly within Ontario, we're seeing a significant number of cases across multiple health units, and particularly of people, number of areas within the southwest of the province that have high case numbers, that if you have exposure, you're traveling in those areas, that might be a risk. But when we look into the broader context of within North America, we're seeing higher rates of measles and then abroad as well. Significant circulation of measles. So there is a risk that is present. I would say when we're looking now, there is a lot of community protection because we have fairly high vaccination rates, and going back, vaccination against measles is the most important way to protect your health. So those are things that mitigate the risk overall, but it's important to be aware of, especially if people are planning travel in the coming months, or in particular, if people have feel they've been exposed or been in places where they've heard that there's a measles case or been contacted from public health units, or if there's exposure settings that are identified, those are particular risks to be aware of.
As Dr. Tumiche noted, Kingston is a community with a higher vaccination rate. Provincially, only 70% of children age 7 were reported to be fully vaccinated against measles in the 2023-24 school year, representing a significant decline since the start of the COVID-19 pandemic. While there was a slight dip in the Kingston region during and following the pandemic, the latest data for Kingston shows just over 96% of children aged 7 are vaccinated.
We have high rates in the community, so this protects us because going to what measles in the very beginning, this is a highly infectious virus. And that's why we see it spread very rapidly where there might be people who are unprotected. And going back to the cases that we have seen in our region, all of the cases that we've seen are amongst people who were previously unvaccinated. So if there's if there's an exposure and someone is not protected from the vaccine, there's a high likelihood that they're going to get it. So that's going to be the biggest way that you can protect yourself. So going back to where people are getting those vaccinations early on or catching up with the schedules, that provides that background immunity that's going to protect both the individual and then the community against wider spread of the virus.
And is there a reason that Kingston has a higher vaccination rate than maybe other areas?
I wouldn't be able to comment fully on all the explanations. I think there's been a lot of efforts in terms of both how people education that's coming out from healthcare partner, from public health, as well on work. And this, I want to attach this back of these would be vaccinations that people are accessing through their healthcare providers, through the public health unit. So I think there's a combination of factors. Anytime that you're looking at what vaccine rates or what people perceptions of vaccine are. So it's a longer conversation. Going back to what people should do is to know your vaccination status. And if people that getting up to date on your vaccines is the most important way to protect yourself, especially if you feel that you might be at risk or you're going to a spot that there might be higher risk of measles. And if you have questions about it, you can always go to the public health website or contact your local healthcare provider or public health would be good places to have your questions answered.
Kingston residents are able to check their immunization records and book an immunization appointment through the Kingston Frontenacs Lennox and Addington Public Health website or by calling their healthcare provider. This has been Christina Laurie with CFRC News, supported by the Local Journalism Initiative.
Thank you, Chris. Next is Dinah Jansen with a story from the Local Journalism Initiative reporter for The Kingstonist, Michelle Dory Forestell, recounting a heroic waterfall rescue performed by the Napanee Fire Department.
Thank you, Jesse. Greater Napanee Town Council recognized the firefighters involved in a recent incident where a vehicle entered the Napanee River, highlighting the bravery of emergency services personnel in the face of a unique emergency. At last week's Town Council meeting, Mayor Terry Richardson thanked the first responders for their efforts. Fire Chief Sean Armstrong detailed the rescue operation, noting the challenges faced and the successful rescue of the driver. The meeting continued with the presentation of certificates to the emergency responders. On Saturday, March 22nd, a vehicle entered the Napanee River and became lodged at the top of the Napanee Falls. During the rescue attempt, two responders found themselves trapped beneath the top of the falls and caught in the powerful currents of the hydraulic and the river, Armstrong explained. He added that through remarkable teamwork and bravery, the firefighters were able to rescue their colleagues and the stranded motorist from the frigid waters. Armstrong noted that the firefighters demonstrated an unwavering commitment to their community and that these individuals not only safeguarded the lives of others, but strengthened the very fabric of the town of Greater Napanee. In total, 16 firefighters were recognized with certificates of appreciation for their selfless service. Thank you to Michelle Dory Forestell for that story. Now over to Jesse Bell with his Kingston Sports Report.
Thank you, Dinah. The inclement weather and icy conditions did not stop Kingston Frontenac fans from making the trip to Slush Puppy Place over the weekend for some playoff hockey. Game 1 between the Kingston Frontenacs and the Sudbury Wolves was played in Kingston last Friday night. The Fronts dominated the time of possession and shot game, building a formidable 3-0 lead at the end of 40 minutes. The Wolves potted their first late in the third to make it 3-1, but Cedric Guindon's empty net goal sent the fans home happy and allowed Kingston to draw first blood in the series. Game 2 was played on a slippery Sunday afternoon in the Limestone City. Though some in the city dealt with storm-related blackouts, there was a palpable energy and electricity at Slush Puppy Place as the Fronts scored 3 goals in the first period to take a commanding 3-1 lead. After a scoreless second, Sudbury would add 2 more to their total to tie the game at 3-3. The first overtime period proved fruitless, so these teams would play their 8th period in 3 days. Just a few minutes into that second overtime period, Kingston's Gage Hayes would score his first goal of the series to give Kingston a strong 2-0 lead. Game 3 was played on Tuesday night in Sudbury, and it was more of the same. Kingston taking an early lead and keeping the pressure on as they cruised to another win. 4 was once again the magic number for the Fronts as they potted a quartet of goals to prevail 4-2. Kingston now has a commanding, dominant 3-0 lead in the series, with a chance to finish the sweep in Sudbury on Thursday night. If Kingston pulls off the sweep, this would be their first playoff series victory since 2022.
Thank you, Jesse. Now over to LJI reporter for CJAI-FM Amherst Island Radio, Ted Evans, with a story about a new summer barbecue competition coming to Napanee.
Hi, I'm Ted Evans, Local Journalism Initiative reporter and news director at CJAI, Amherst Island Radio, 101.3 FM in Stella, Ontario. Coming up are some of the top news stories from Loyalist Township. You can hear Amherst Island Radio's news program, North Shore News, on 101.3 Amherst Island Radio or online at cjai.ca. For showtimes throughout the week, check the schedule on our website at cjai.ca. The Great Bay of Quinte Barbecue Competition is one final step away from getting official approval by council. Once approved, the event will take place August 23rd in Market Square. Council noted they were finalizing the framework for the town's new events policy and would need to complete that before fully approving the event. They mentioned the event seemed to fit within the town's current policy and that no major changes to the policy that would affect the event are expected. The purpose of the policy is to set a consistent procedure for staff to manage current and future events. Donald Stokes, a volunteer with the competition, mentioned the work the group has put into this event.
We've been working long and hard on bringing the barbecue competition here to Napanee based on the model that was done in Western Canada. We've came a long ways. We now have the counties on board for a fairly significant financial contribution. We have two out of three categories fully sponsored. We have the third category. It's just a question of what form of whether it's going to be a sponsorship or a donation.
Stokes speaks about giving back to the community.
Being 100% volunteer organization, so to speak, everything that we do is giving back to the community, or everything is intended with any surplus is to give back to the community. Things that are approved assets to be able to add to the town, be it a bike rack, it could be a sign for a trail, it could be any one of a number of things. Maybe it's seeds for a soccer pitch. But just things that are a legitimate asset to the town.
Stokes requested standard event protocols take place on the day, such as garbage removal, fire and safety measures, street sweeping, and a road closure. He noted the volunteer group would take care of providing restrooms.
We'll make sure that we have an adequate amount of at least four porta potties, two of which will be fully accessible. We'll also make sure that we, when it comes to it, that we have full hand washing stations with proper hand sanitizer to go and meet or exceed any grade when it comes to health and safety.
Councillor Mike Shank showed his support for hosting the event in Napanee.
I think it's an excellent idea. We have a farmer's market that now is going to be established, and then here's another community event that you're going to be doing. And so I think any way that the town can rally around this and make it how many times do you have a barbecue event like something like that in this town? If anybody contribute or help out or any way possible, I think it's a great event, and hopefully the town rallies around it. And how often you get to go and watch a barbecue competition.
Stokes shared his hopes for the town's new event policy and spoke about where they are now.
Our stated mandate is promote, provide, inspire. It very, very, clear. And I hope that is somehow is encouraged as part of the events policy, but I'm really happy that we've hit this point where this is beginning to go forward.
Mayor Terry Richardson noted he thinks the event will be a success.
I know that there are lots of folks in this community that I think would be very excited about being in the downtown area and tasting some very good barbecued products.
For Amherst Island Radio and the Local Journalism Initiative, I'm Ted Evans.
Thank you to Ted Evans for that story. Back to Christina Laurie with a report on the continued labor actions on Queen's University campus.
Hello, I'm Christina Laurie, Local Journalism Initiative reporter for CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston, Ontario. Coming up are some of the top news stories in Kingston and the Islands. You can listen to CFRC's news programs Today in YGK and Kingston Currents on Mondays, Tuesdays, and Wednesdays at 5 p.m. or subscribe to our podcasts on Spotify and Apple Music. If you have any Kingston news tips you'd like to share, you can reach me at news@cfrc.ca.
The end of the school year is looking uncertain as we enter week 3 of the Queen's Graduate Student Workers Strike. In addition to the direct impact of teaching assistants, teaching fellows, and postdoctoral scholars being on strike, many professors at Queen's have also invoked their collective agreement right to not cross the picket line. Professors showed their support for workers on strike at a teach-in on Friday, March 21st, as well as in an open letter to Principal Patrick Dean, Provost Matthew Evans, and the Board of Trustees, signed by 179 faculty members so far. The open letter urges the university to work on ending the strike before the end of the term, reporting a list of disruptions to teaching, learning, and research on campus, including dozens of courses taught by teaching fellows and hundreds of labs and tutorials now on hold, assessments being canceled, research put on hold, and papers being left ungraded. Professors and various faculties delivered impassioned lectures before the lively crowd at the teach-in in front of Richardson Hall on Friday.
Oh, Solidarity!
Dr. Margaret Papineau, a professor in the English department, had the following to say.
And I want to say to Patrick Dean and Matthew Evans, get our students back to class. This is not normal. Students on the picket line is not normal. It's not business as usual. It is wrong. Yeah! You need it, Evans. You are responsible for suspending the learning at this institution. Yeah! Yeah! Administration is asking faculty to give students grades that will not truly assess what a student has done in a course. And that is wrong. Yeah! If they cared about learning, they would do everything in their power to get students back into the classroom. So in closing, I just want to say to our principal and provost, we are not fools. You did not bargain in good faith. Do it over.
While Friday's teach-in was well-attended, professors have been having a mix of responses to the strike. Undergraduates are seeing some classes put on halt or heavily modified, while others continue as planned. Dr. Susan Lord, a professor in the Department of Film and Media and acting department head of gender studies, had the following message for colleagues who are continuing classes as scheduled.
I wish more of my colleagues were here. Because how can we be a good colleague to all of our grad students and our TAs and our TFs and our RAs while supporting undergraduate students? We can do it by not being a scrape, by not crossing a picket line, and by using our very beautiful and very rare right to use Article 12.3.C to show solidarity and explain to your students why.
The latest update on the Queen's Labor News page reads as following. Quote, Queen's respects the collective bargaining process and the work of PSAC Unit 1 members, and we remain committed to reaching an agreement. 10 working days ago, the university presented a comprehensive and competitive offer to PSAC. We are disappointed that PSAC chose to not respond and instead elected to strike. We will continue to bargain terms and conditions of employment in good faith. And our objective is to achieve a negotiated tentative agreement to renew the collective agreement that both parties can ratify. This has been Christina Laurie with CFRC News, supported by the Local Journalism Initiative.
Thank you to Christina Laurie for that story. Over now to the Local Journalism Initiative reporter for CFWN Coburg, Dan Jones, with a story about the possible expansion of the Coburg Public Library.
The Coburg Public Library is looking to expand its meeting room capacity, eyeing a soon-to-be-vacated space in the same building. The Northumberland County Archives and Museum, which is now closed, is preparing to move its operations by September to the newly constructed Golden Plow Lodge Seniors Facility. Library CEO Tammy Robinson presented to Coburg Municipal Council Wednesday, saying this low-cost, high-impact idea would not only bring in more revenue to the library, but provide much-needed space for the public.
By expanding the library's physical space, we can accommodate a wider variety of resources, including study rooms, meeting rooms, and areas for community gatherings and social events.
The library was built more than 30 years ago, and Robinson suggested the community has changed much in that time. By moving to the former archives location, the library can expand without undertaking a massive construction project. She says last year the library declined 176 requests for meeting space due to conflicting availability. While Robinson admits not all these requests could be accommodated, many would have been.
Coburg Public Library may be the only or one of the only community spaces that offers free meeting space to our community members. Often all of our work tables and study carrels are occupied with the demand for more. The library now services a much larger population than when it was built 30 years ago, and our community's need for space has substantially grown.
Councillor Adam Bureau, who is a self-proclaimed supporter of the library, questioned why Robinson would present to council rather than discussing her needs with town staff. She replied that she did speak with staff, indicating the town has plans once the space is vacated. Details on those plans have yet to be revealed. Robinson says she wanted to present to council to inform them and the public of the library's needs. Reporting for CFWN and the Local Journalism Initiative, I'm Dan Jones.
And thank you to Dan Jones for that story. Next up is Jesse Bell with CFRC's Environment Canada weather forecast for the Kingston region.
This is Jesse Bell with your Environment Canada weather report for the Kingston region. Thursday, April 3rd, we're going to see more unseasonably warm weather with a daytime high of 16 degrees, the warmest day of the year thus far, and a 60% chance of showers throughout, dropping down to 1 degree overnight, and it will be cloudy. Friday, April 4th, another double-digit day, 10 degrees and cloudy, dropping down to minus 2 overnight. Saturday, April 5th, more warm weather, albeit a touch colder at a daytime high of 7 degrees, and it will be cloudy. Sunday, April 6th, 11 is the daytime high with a 60% chance of precipitation, and moving into the start of next week, Monday, April 7th, daytime high of 5 degrees, but it will be dreary and windy. This is your City of Kingston traffic report for the week. Reduced load restrictions are in effect in Kingston as of March 1st. Heavy trucks and loads are restricted on city roads where posted. These restrictions help reduce damage to roads in the spring. A complete list of roads with restrictions can be found in the Traffic Bylaws section of the City of Kingston website. Here are your road closures for the week. Aberdeen Street, William 2 Johnson is closed to accommodate construction activity and staging. Albert Street, Princess to 486 Albert is closed to accommodate construction activity and staging at 484 Albert Street. King Street, the tragically hip way to Place d'Armes, is closed April 2nd at 7:30 p.m. to April 4th at 2 a.m. for Riley Green event-related parking and storage at Slush Puppy Place. Reminder that the Hanson Memorial Parking Structure Restoration Project is now underway. The work will take place throughout all levels of the building and will include efforts such as routine structural maintenance, repainting, replacement of waterproofing materials, and upgrades to the building's mechanical and electrical systems. The work is planned to conclude in July of 2025. At all times during construction, efforts are being made to ensure that approximately 100 spaces remain available for parkers. Here are some other delays to be aware of. Front Road, Sand Bay to Country Club. Expect delays for the installation of sanitary and water main for Utilities Kingston. Traffic will be reduced to one lane in each direction. Please be aware of lane shifts, traffic speed limits, and share the lane signage. Highway 2, Abbeydon to St. Lawrence. Expect delays to complete enhanced flood protection of Abbeydon Road, Highway 2, and St. Lawrence Avenue. Montreal Street at John Counter. Expect delays for upgrades to the intersection including new lighting, traffic signals, lanes, paving, and signage to improve safety and efficiency for all road users and accommodate increased traffic from the Wabin Crossing.
And that's a wrap for this week's edition of The Corridor, supported by the Local Journalism Initiative and the Community Radio Fund of Canada. Don't forget to visit CFRC.ca for the latest in local and regional news headlines, concert and events listings, and more. You can also follow CFRC on Facebook and Instagram at CFRC Music and on Twitter X at CFRC. You can support CFRC and its independent news programming by donating via CFRC.ca. We'll be back next week with more in local and regional news. Thank you for joining us. Thank you for listening to this podcast produced at CFRC 101.9 FM at Queen's University in Kingston, Ontario, situated on the traditional territories of the Anishinaabe and Haudenosaunee peoples, and brought to you by the generous support of Smith Engineering.